Hi, everybody. How are you today? This is Mark Chaffardini with the Go See Pop Podcast Experience. Thank you for joining us. It's a lovely day outside. We're here with Paul Salfin talking to great men. Lives in Dallas, Texas. He's making the rounds. He's Drew Pearson's best friend. He's parties with people that you know, people you want to know, wears hats better than Pharrell and Jamie Foxx. But Paul, all that joking aside, how are things in your world? Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Everything in my world is great right now. I've got this new book going for it, which I'm so excited about. It took years and years out of my life. So it's, it's been one of those things that now that it's sort of, now that you've had the baby, you're like, oh, all right, what do we do? And it's been a huge learning curve, but also something that's been really, really fun to work on, because we've got, it's just been great, because I've had a really, really fun life and a really fun run talking to some of the great people that are the greatest at what they do in the world. And now get to talk about it and hopefully share the inspiration that's in there with, like, what I want to do is share it with schools and libraries and people that need the inspiration more than anybody.
I love all that, because it's about reaching for your dreams. It may not be a battle plan on how to achieve it, but, like, never give up, never surrender, and one day you could be sitting in a chair talking about a book. Yeah, I mean, your stories probably have stories. You know, there's this idea that you never truly know somebody. You're only seeing the tip of the iceberg of who they are and what they are. But why don't we go back to the very beginning? You are one of Dallas's favorite personalities, but where'd you come from? Where'd you go? What'd you learn? What'd you do? How did you get here?
Well, I was born in Clarksdale, Mississippi, the home of the blues, and always had music in my blood. And then, you know, we were my parents are great. They're high school sweethearts. They've been together since the eighth grade, and they, you know, our roots are in Texas, but we lived in Philadelphia while I was in the middle school, high school, and college. So I kind of got my little bit of East Coast blood in me, but I'm true Texan, and so you know, it's kind of interesting how this whole thing came about, because when I was in high school, I don't know if you had one of those broadcasting classes, but where they had the little prison-like TVs in the corner of the room.
Fake newsroom, yeah.
So every classroom had a TV in the corner, and the morning for the announcements, the students would read the announcements poorly, I might add. And, of course, you'd also get some news, some weather, some sports, and entertainment. And so the teacher saw me with the long hair and the ripped jeans and the, I was in a band, and he goes, you like bands, go talk to some musicians, you know? And so what did we do? We took our big clunky cameras, and I started knocking on the backstage doors, side doors, bus doors, club doors of like every place that we always like looked up to in Philadelphia. And so I started talking to these really, really big people, and you know, ended up befriending like the bass player Stone Temple Pilots, and they were playing Megadeth, and you know, just all these like really, really big people. And I came back with all this footage, and I was excited. And the teacher literally smacked his head, and he goes, "I met bands in the school," and I was like, "Oh no!" And he said, "Yeah, but good job. I don't know how you figured out how to do that." And you know, I wanted to do like what they did on MTV. Like I would see on like Headbangers Ball or on MTV News, I'd sit there and talk to the big people. Well, that's what I wanted to do. So then in Penn State, I went to the school newspaper and I said, I want to do some interviews with some bands. I said, that doesn't have anything to do with our school, no way. So I was managing a record store, and the guy said, well, why don't you just talk to the people that are coming in for signings or promotions? And so we started one of the first online music magazines. I ended up getting school credit for it and interviewing all these crazy people that I had probably no right to talk to all through college. And then by the time I graduated, I marched into Dallas Morning News, and I was like, okay, I want to do your celebrity interviews. They said, yeah, you and everybody else, but like, what have you done? And so, bam, printed out a packet of all these people, and they go, oh, wow, okay, yeah, all right, you're up. So, and then got picked up as editor-in-chief for Envy Magazine, and then went on to 944 and Flavor Pill, and then went on the radio, and then finally ended up with Drew Pearson, which was also kind of a fluke. I asked him if you ever need an ugly white guy to come on and, you know, talk about some entertainment stuff, I'll be your guy. And he said, I'll see you on Thursday. And that was it. There was no audition. There was no nothing. I just asked the question. And here we are 12 years later. I'm still doing it.
Yeah. You know, I think that that perfectly encapsulates the idea that if you never ask, you'll never get. You know, taking that chance, a lot like your book, I'm stealing the title of it, Going For It. It's like just having the idea to carry something forward and go after what you want. You know, you may not get it. You know, it's like a lottery, but it sounds like that you've had a winning ticket in your pocket since high school.
Yeah. Well, I've tried. I mean, of course, you know, you don't bring up all the times that you were turned down or you didn't make the cut, or, you know, there was a lot of things I applied for and didn't get, you know, but overall, I would have to say that my output has been pretty good considering, which is, you know, just been a whole lot of trial and error, a lot of error. But, you know, it's just been trying to figure out how to make things work and just making good connections with people. You know, I've done all kinds of radio spots, and I've started a couple of TV shows, and I've just done just everything I can just to try and, you know, do all the good content and do what I love, which is talking to the greatest people about what they do and what makes them great.
Sure. Well, you know, I think about looking through, piggybacking what you said, you know, you look through a photo album, which these days it's all like photo streams. Like you only see smiles in a photo album. You don't see frowns, and frowns are what happens in between the smiles. So it's like, yeah, you struggle. You may not, you know, make your struggles public. People may not know about it, but you get the one, you know, shot of glory. You get your name on a Blu-ray, you get a pull quote on a, you know, a poster or something like that. And it's all like, those are really cool take homes. Cause you know, they're kind of as immortal as the film itself. So it's nice that you've got quite a few of those in your pocket, just like it. So your pocket square, let's just jump to the visuals. Tell me about that pocket square.
Yeah. Well, this one's kind of a cool one. It's, you know, it's got this, but then that, depending on your, it's good for all seasons.
Belt and suspenders. Yeah. It's nice.
You know, if you can't be good looking, you just try and look as good as you can, right? So try and be a little bit decorative, you know, I got all kinds of things on. And things to ward off spells and demons, you know, difficult people. Doesn't work though.
Well, let's talk about your music real quick. You mentioned before we started you did music and you were in bands. So what kind of energy do you bring to the band? What kind of, you know, what was your role? Things, you know, things that you need to be on stage, so to speak.
Yeah. So in high school, I was in part of a punk metal band, and that kind of gave me my first boost of confidence. That made me think, oh, like this would be really cool to do it. And we were on a label showcase, you know, right as soon as we graduated, and we were like, wow, this could maybe be it. Of course, it didn't work out. It was probably better than it didn't. But you know, then I was in a band all throughout college. So that was really cool and very creative. And you know, the singer was up there with some of the best of them. And so it kind of made me think, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, and then we started to get to know other bands that were actually signed and touring and doing it. And I started thinking, all right. And then when I moved down here to Dallas, an old childhood friend I reconnected with, we'd never lived in Dallas, either one of us. But, you know, my dad had said, yeah, you remember Shannon Barrett? You know, you guys were friends, you know, years ago in middle school. I said, yeah. And he said, well, you know, he's a singer. And I was thinking, no. Okay. I said, well, you know, you should meet up with him. You know, you don't know as many people here. And oh, all right, sure. You know, and I went to a Starbucks and I said, you know, and he goes, yeah, so you play music? Well, no, I play music. I'd like to play you some. And I thought he was going to hand me a CD. For those that don't know, back in the day, those are in the now coasters that you see around. But but they we're big fans of Physical Media. But instead, he got an acoustic guitar out of the back of his trunk, and he just played and sang in the middle of the parking lot. And I was just like, these songs are amazing. And so that became Far Star, which became the Far Star. And yeah, we did an album with Matt Pence, who's you know, one of our great producers in the area, and you know, played a couple festivals and did a bunch of shows and put out an album. And did the whole thing, and then they carried on, and I still love the music. And just about every 5 years, we get back together. So I think we're about due for it.
Do you have anything on the books yet, or is this just all like theoretical thinking?
So Shannon reached out to me, and I love it when he does, because that means he's got a new song. And and they're always just so brilliant. He's just one of those like special people. And even though the band never really got huge, I think it's one of those things that like it's still, even the songs are recorded years ago don't sound like they're recorded years ago. Like it's got like kind of a, it's just got a great quality, and he's just such a great songwriter. But he's also not one of those shameless self-promoters and doesn't really care to do as much social media and all that saying and all the things that you seem to need now. He's perfectly happy just writing good songs. And so he said, "I have an idea." And of course it was great. And we started, he came over and we started playing. I go, "Okay, we don't have to do the shows. We don't have to do that whole thing, but can we just at least record this and put it out there? Because you never know. As we talk to people all the time, and it doesn't seem to matter so much." And I use my daughter as a litmus test on the stuff. They don't seem to know like how old the people are in the bands, or what they look like, or what they've done before. They're just like, do they like it or do they not? And I feel like a good friend of mine said that a good song does not have a half-life. So I feel like there is a chance for maybe some of these songs to do something. Shoot, that'd be great if some of them could get on a TV show or a movie at some point. That'd be special, but until then, it's just great to just love doing it, and as you were asking before about, to get up on stage, it is tough, because I always say I'm like an introvert in an extrovert's job, I have to go out there and be the talking monkey and do the thing. But, most of the time I kind of revert back to, watching horror movies and drinking Dr. Pepper and, like listening to bad, hair metal music and, just kind of doing the same, things that I always do, and just kind of, spend a lot more time alone than people think. So to get up on stage or to go play in a band or to do any of those things requires a confidence that you kind of have to pump yourself up for. But, I don't know, there's something that I do that just kind of like a glaze kind of comes over me, and that just doesn't bother me. I was on stage this weekend at Fan Expo, and I don't know, like people are like, "How do you do that?" I was like, "I don't know. I just get up." It's kind of like jumping off the diving board. You don't really think about it, because if you do, then you'll get all in your head. Like, "Ah, is my zipper up? Is my face okay? Do I look tired?" Am I, And I just try not to think about it. I just do it. That's also why I never watch my interviews either, because then I'll just sit there and be like, "Oh, come on. You gotta quit." Like, stop. Do you hear yourself? So look at yourself. Did you just get out of bed? It's just all those like things in your head. So I don't read comments and I don't watch my interviews. So
Man, that is bliss because yeah, I think that's one of the things that they urge you not to do is look in the comments and pick up on what people are saying because I think if you as long as you feel comfortable with yourself and you just keep moving forward, I mean all these things are just going to slow you down and like you said, you don't want to take yourself out of it or think too much, just go and do it. And it's funny the panels that I've done or the times I've been at the Alamo, I think the stage lights do kind of help. It's not that the people are intimidating. It's one less thing you have to focus on because it lets you focus on the talent or the entertainment or whoever you're speaking to. So I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm just so like I have such a hectic schedule, and I kind of do that on purpose. And I just kind of know what I have to do at a certain time, and I just go. And I try not to think about it. I don't get in my head about any of this stuff, because that's where it'll get you. And I just do as much as I can, as long as I can. I mean, I've run into Jack in the Box and done Zoom interviews just so, because there's just no time. It's like, okay, I've got about 10 minutes to do this. Let's hope they're running on time. Let's go.
Fair enough.
But it's easy to get yourself all wound up, and I try not to do that.
Well, I started doing this in Dallas around 2009, and we're coming up on 15 years, and so a lot has changed both in how the entertainment industry works, how their distribution models go, press tours, pandemic. It's changed a lot, but is there anything that you've seen that like Was there a glory day? Was there better times? Are things better now because it's so much technologically, seamed together? What's your take on kind of where we are right now?
Man, I feel like I've done it through all the different times, and I may or may not look like it, but I've been around a long time, and so when we first started doing these things, it was we were like at the little micro cassette tapes, when we were doing interviews, and there are no cameras around or cell phones or social media, and it was very, very laid back. It was very kind of different. And now everyone's so hyper aware of what's going on around them. And they want to make sure that they get, something on their phone for it. You get something on your phone for it. Their people get something on their phone. But, it's all this extra stuff that really has little to do with the content itself or the journalism itself. But yeah, I mean, it's gone through changes, but I always like to think that these are the glory days, that's just the best way to look at it because, there are a lot of people that live in the past and, the past is is tied to depression, and anxiety is, tied to the future. And so really you just have to be present and think like, okay, there's nothing I could do about the time before or what's coming up now. So right now I'm just here. This is the good times. This is the good stuff. I'm getting the good things, and that's always kind of worked for me because yeah. Are there people that I, regret not interviewing or not, or roads I wanted to go down? Sure, but I don't really think about it. And what's going to happen now? Who knows, we're in a whole mess of things with AI, there's all kinds of things changing, but really I think the heart of it all is still the same for me. Just talking to the people that are the greatest at what they do and getting the best things from them about how they work. I mean, that's the stuff I find interesting, and it's what we call evergreen. So like, it's good for any time. And yeah, I mean, things are going to change all the time. And, we will fall out of favor due to our age or what we look like, or, but who our family is and, who knows, but the best thing I can do is just keep doing what I'm doing and just try and get a little bit better every year.
Well, I'd say from interviewing people like Richard Branson and Harrison Ford, it's like your trajectory is constantly going. But on that note, you look at your Instagram or you follow you as a person and you see so many personalities and it looks like you've got a taste for everything. But if we can get to the real Paul, what are your real tastes? What are, things that you may not go after on your own? You might have gotten opportunity or asked to do it, but like, what kind of, you mentioned punk music, punk rock music. What are the things that you like? Who are the, people that you like?
Well, I've done a great and terrible thing by turning everything I love into work. So music has always been my first love in film. And then I've talked to, pretty much all the musicians I've wanted to, or all the, actors I've wanted to, as well as producers, directors, writers. Now I've expanded into authors, astronauts, CEOs, celebrity chefs, reality star. Like I'm, if I find it interesting, I'll talk to them, and so there hadn't really been a category because now, like, I just got pitched about one of the top spine surgeons, it never ends. So, and the more I keep doing things like the book or shows or things like that, then people go, oh, well, what about this? And it's always something I haven't thought about. And I've delved into, food writing and travel writing and all that stuff. So I'm really kind of like, open to everything, but I know that like, if I found something interesting about, model trains, I'd find a way to turn it down, talk to the top person that does this or the people that make the train. It's just the way my mind works. So thankfully there's always somebody new that's coming up or somebody that's interesting. And I just try and keep it open. I'm somehow on all these lists of all these publicists to do all these things in different areas. And so they'll be like, I know this might be a stretch, but how about this? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? So, and being able to control what kind of content you do is really kind of saved me a lot. As you probably understand, because, you know, when you work for somebody and you have a very, you know, a stringent outline of like what it is that you do, then it's kind of boring to me.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, it's great to be able to write your own ticket or sort of, you know, chart your own path without having to go through the hurdles or bureaucracy of something. I mean, I remember you telling me that you were doing a lot of overseas interviews or interviews for clients overseas and having to deal with them and just the back and forth and what it took to just to get something through the transaction. But then again, you mentioned Jack in the Box, but then you also mentioned panels. So like there's a big diversity of, you know, how an interview is structured, how fun it can be, who it is. I guess all that rambling aside, what do you like better? If you just had to choose one, do you like panel with 1,000 people, or do you like being in the corner of a ballroom with an actor just conversing one-to-one like that with nothing else around?
I kind of like the experience of it all. So I end up doing a lot of interviews, like junket interviews, like in, you know, LA or New York, where you're in a hotel room and so they've got it all set up to where there's lights and cameras and people are coming in and out and you have a very short amount of time to do things. And those are very common. I've really talking about things changing, the pandemic, while it is terrible for so many people, I actually somehow strangely enjoyed it because I didn't have to go anywhere. And then all of a sudden everybody became available and I just started making these wild requests just out of nowhere. I was just looking at my music collection and going, I've never talked to anybody from Creedence Clearwater Revival. I wonder what those guys are doing, you know, and then just messaging just about everybody that was, I had like a wish list back in college that I ran through. And then, every once in a while, I'll be like, oh, it'd be nice to do that. And I just somehow seemed to just knock it all off. And so now I just start thinking, you know, I start going through my playlist and going, oh, wow, I wonder what that guy's doing now. Or oh, yeah, they do have a new album, you know, or I wonder if they're working on any movie. And so then I reach out to them directly. And, you know, thankfully now I've done enough stuff to where they can look me up and go, all right, that goes there. That guy's okay. And I just reach out and I never get bored that way, you know, because there's always, the way I've set up my life is there's always something to look forward to. You know, I make sure I probably have, you know, I have at least a couple of interviews a day. And so it's always like, before I go to bed, I'm like, ah, that'll be fun, you know?
Well, by virtue of what you said earlier, I'm sure you have just so many offers and it's very easy to say yes to everything. And, you know, I think those yield the most exciting opportunities. I mean, at least I could say that for myself. I may know nothing about the person, and sometimes that makes the interview even more exciting than had I been a super fan or had all the albums or seen all the movies. Because there's this exploratory nature of the interview, and I really dig into these long form ones. I mean, the press junkets were great. I really miss going to, you know, the hotel downtown or wherever there's a, you know, press junket, but it was like 4 hours just to get 5 minutes. But now you can get, if you do it right, you can get 20, 30, maybe an hour. And it just feels, you know, you're having more of a conversation instead of, don't ask the press junket questions because he's already answered that. So it's like, what's your entry point? So all that aside, it's fun, you know, fun being in this process for who you get to meet.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, kind of to go back to your question about it, though, what I prefer is oftentimes an experience. So if I'm, because like you said, there's a lot of running around for a very short amount of time. And that's kind of exhausting. So what I've been enjoying lately, because I remember at one point, I was really trying to get back for a family event. And the plane got delayed. There's a storm in New York, you know, and I got diverted, I think, to Austin. And I was just like, I can't believe it. I went up to New York for one 4-minute interview, you know, and now I'm missing my family stuff. And, just, who knows what's going to happen, you know, and I can't even recall now which interview it was. It probably wasn't even like the, you know, one of the definitive ones. It probably wasn't anything even in the book, you know? And so I start thinking about like all the effort that goes into it. And so, in college, I got to talk to John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin, and he had me in his hotel room And he said, "Oh, I have my mandolin here. You want me?" And he started playing it, and we're, you know, like, "Oh my gosh!" And he goes, "Are you going to the show? Do you want to ride?" And riding with it, you know, like when there's something that's just, or Mick Taylor from the Stones is like, he didn't want to hang out at the venue anymore, and he wanted to go back to the hotel. And he's like, "Yeah, come in." He goes, "But, you know, this is gonna be funny." And so we jump from the backstage door into a van that had the doors open so he didn't have to get on the street. And then a whole line of cars were chasing him with, you know, their albums ready to go. And we go in the hotel lobby, and there all these people are running. And it's just kind of like, does this happen all the time? It's like every show. And, you know, just those kind of things are like, wow, that's kind of cool. And, you know, just being able to interview people. I just did an interview for Netflix for the that 90s show, and I got to go on the set and watch them film and then do the interviews on the actual set. That stuff totally worth doing, you know. But you know, there's but now I'm starting to be a little bit more cognizant about time and like, okay, how much effort is this going to take to do all this? You know, am I going to drive all the way to Austin for, you know, a 5-minute interview, find a place to stay, do gas, tolls, eating, you know, all that stuff, and come back? Who knows? You know, because I'm just one person. So it's not like I have some big company supporting me and like a unlimited credit card where I'm like, sure, we'll take my plane. I don't have one. But my friends do.
Good friends to have, actually.
Yes.
Well, talking about experiences, why don't we just jump to your book? You've got a cover that has you jumping. Clearly, you're going for it. I remember seeing that picture years ago. Tell us about where that picture, who took that picture, and about jumping in the pool.
So this picture, for those of you at home, this picture is me jumping into a pool in a full suit. Now, I tried to get the entire image on the book cover because I think it's kind of even funnier because it's me jumping and then there's a pool below and then you see my shadow, you know, on the water. It was taken by Brian Anderson, and this was actually taken years ago at the for Envy magazine. We used to do letters from the editor, and we would do a different picture every month just because, you know, they wanted some cool stuff to do, and you know, it's always fun to do. And usually I was the light test for one of our subjects. So, you know, so I would sit in and then I'd be like, okay, cool, I got a new picture. But this one, we really decided to go for it because I jumped in this pool at the south side of Lamar with the full suit on. And of course I ruined the suit, I ruined the shoes, but it was worth it. I've gotten plenty of use out of it. Now it's definitely worth it. But it was fun. And people are like, did you really jump in the pool? I'm like, yeah, you should have seen the cleaning lady, like the lady's face when I walked into the cleaners and had this wet dry cleaning bag that was dripping. And she goes, you get drunk and fall in the pool? I was like, no, I did it on purpose. And she's like, oh, just shook her head.
You know, and I think that might crystallize the idea that you have one shot, take it, because there was no second take, you know. But I'm sure, was Brian Anderson shooting video that was a still, or was that just a snapshot?
That was a still. So, well, he had it on sports mode. So, okay. So he shot, and I went up, click, 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 and then down, and then in the water. And it's a funniest sequence of pictures. And sadly enough, I think those are lost in time. There's a big flood or storm in Houston, and his hard drive with a lot of his old stuff got damaged. And so we only have that one perfect shot. So maybe somewhere in the Envy files, there's me slowly going into the pool and then soaked, and maybe I'll find that someday. But for now, that's what we got. And I had to actually do it. And so it's been fun to kind of, you know, recreate the jump in all different places, but not in the pool again.
Wise choice.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the entry point to the book, what is the first story? What was the one that you said, you know what, if I write a book, it's got to be this? And then did everything fall into place after that?
So that's interesting. So the whole reason I did the book was because a few years ago, a friend of mine said, oh, you should come tell these stories. Like, I tell your stories at my speeches. you know, and he gets paid to go. He is, I wish I could say, oh, Tom Cruise told me this, or, oh, I went and did the, you know, but I say, you know, my buddy Paul, he talked to Tom Cruise and he told me that, you know, or Bono said this, or, you know, whoever. And I'm just like, well, he goes, but you got to write a book. That's kind of like your entry point to that whole speaking world. They want to have so-and-so author of such and such, you know, and that's how all these guys do it. And I was like, I don't even know. And he goes, why don't you write these stories? Why don't you write your story? And I go, I don't know if people want to hear my story yet. You know, maybe I'm not there. I don't know. And in a fairly short time, I got hit by a drunk driver, and then I got sideswiped by an 18-wheeler. And then I was in a car that caught on fire. And so I came out of all three of those things without a scratch. And I just thought, maybe I have something left to do here. And I was at home going through a lot of footage and going through the clips. And I started to realize that they were taking, when we were on Fox Sports, they were taking, and then ABC, they were taking the best stuff out of my interviews and using the most innocuous things. So I interviewed Hugh Jackman for The Wolverine. And it was just an offhand remark that I think it was even before we started. I said, hey, you look great. I was like, I need to get in that Wolverine shape. And he said, oh, believe me, I wouldn't be in this kind of shape if I wasn't playing a Wolverine. And then, you know, we ended up talking about, like, you know, all kinds of struggles he had, you know, his wins, the highs, the lows, all that stuff. And all they used was that little comment about, whatever. And they did the same thing with Seth Rogen. I was like, man, you look great. You know, it was when he had lost a lot of weight, and then they wanted to use that clip because he hadn't talked about his, you know. I go, no, that wasn't even part of the interview. You know, it was just part of like the raw footage. You know, but the thing is, like, that's where, that's where I started to realize all this good stuff was on the cutting room floor, just time after time after time again. You know, and they would just use the promotional stuff, which I understand. You get 3 minutes for a TV clip. You're going to have them talking about the movies, but man, to leave all that stuff just to die, you know? And so I just thought, it's kind of morbid, but I thought, like, if I die, their words die with me. So, you know, I can't let this stuff go to waste. So I was like, well, I'll at least like put it together in like a document or something. And then I started to realize this would actually be a really cool book. This is actually like the book that I wish that I had when I was in high school, and going, yeah, sure, it'd be nice, you know, nice to do this, but how, you know? And you just assume that all the rich and famous people were just rich and famous, and that's why they were who they were. And, you know, we're living in the dark ages, and that was that. And this is more like a, you know, kind of like a guidebook. So what happened is I ended up going through 1,000 interviews and like literally 1,000 interviews, and typed it all out and bam, and put my story in there. And this thing was bigger than, like, page wise than the Bible. I was like, this is not right. Like, I cannot do this to people. No one's going to read this. And so I cut it in half, and it was still too long. And I would go, okay, you know, this might need to be a series. And so I go, yeah, maybe people don't care about my story yet. You know, maybe that comes with, you know, if they care about the book and the book series. So I took out my story, and it's just really kind of a quick intro, you know, and go right into the meat of it. And it's just, the subtitle underneath is Advice, Wisdom, and Hail Mary Moments from the Stars. So there's three sections: the advice from all the big people, the wisdom, the things they've learned, the things they do differently. And then the Hail Mary moments, it's that question on our show with Drew Pearson. And of course, he caught the Hail Mary, went in the Hall of Fame. And we asked people, what's your Hail Mary moment? The moment in your life or career where you just had to go for it and it worked out for you. So that's that. And so there's those three sections, and there's a 10-point takeaway. And then a bunch of pictures for the people who don't like to read. And then that's it. You know, it's very simple. And it's a nice, you know, smaller kind of book. So it's easy. It's like a travel size. You can stick it in your computer bag. You can, you know, put it in the end of the toilet, whatever, wherever you think it should go.
It's compact enough to also fit on a child's bookcase. So when you're reading your children to bed, you can regale them with tales of Paul Salvin talking to a myriad of people. No, that's great. Handy and
well,
consistent.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is to be able to turn to any given page and just see, just see what you get, you know? So You know, this page is in the J's, obviously, because it's alphabetical order. Jim Caviezel, who played Jesus. And then Jim Cummings, who, you know, we love, is a great indie filmmaker. And Jim Sturgis, you know, across the universe. Mm-hmm. And you should be able to just turn to whoever, like Nicolas Cage, Owen Wilson, Nichelle Nichols, you know, Nancy Lieberman, you know, just a wide variety of like, oh, that's cool. And it's just their stories, and it should be served as like some inspiration. And that's really the idea, you know. And so right now I'm trying to get it into a bunch of schools and libraries, just, you know, so it can have the full power of their words, and that they continue to live on after we're gone.
Well, love to get the book in the hands of people who want to read your story, but it's got the 10-point takeaway at the back. What's one point? Can you tease us with one free point?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, you know, kind of the biggest thing is never taking no for an answer. You know, I mean, of course, we get that all the time. But I mean, it's just never giving up, you know, and that seems to be the common denominator, which is why it's called Going For It, because a lot of the people are, you know, they aren't necessarily the, you know, the tallest or best looking or, you know, in best shape or whatever it is that you think is holding you back from being, you know, that person. You know, they just tried harder, you know, instead of going out or instead of going on the trip, you know, they worked harder on their craft, or they networked, or they did whatever it is they needed to do to try and, you know, to do better than everybody else. And so really what it is it's just like, it's just a very quick thing, but, you know, so, yeah, don't take no for an answer. And, if you don't ask the question, you won't get the answer, you know, and that goes right back to what I was saying about Drew. You know, if I hadn't walked up to him and made a joke about myself and say, you know, like, he wouldn't have said yes. And I wouldn't have been on probably TV at all. Cause at the time I just thought, I got a face for radio. I'm on radio, you know, and I do print interviews, and that's pretty much it. But he gave me a shot, you know, sight unseen. And that was great. Yeah. And so a lot of it's just kind of never giving up and being persistent and having a singular vision and being ready to jump at opportunities and being willing to help and give back and, you know, kind of quality controlling yourself and staying positive. And even when things go wrong, and just basically believe you can achieve, you know.
That's one hell of a fortune cookie you got there, Paul.
Yeah, it's a big fortune cookie. Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of funny too, because it is, you know, kind of bite sized like fortune cookie wisdom in some places, but other places it gets really deep. You know, people tell, you know, really kind of personal stories about, you know, their struggles and how they went through it. And it's oftentimes we don't get to see some of these people, and not for nothing, over 20 people that I've, you know, talked to that are in this book are no longer with us. You know, you don't get another chance at them. So I'm hoping that their words will live on in this thing.
You know, I think there's another thing that you take away from this too, is that the world needs more possibility. Well, possibilities, yes, you make your own possibilities, but positivity, enunciate, yes. Mark. But the idea that, you know, Ellen used to end her show with be kind. Kevin Hart would say something similar. And I think that there's so much trolling and wanting and greed out there that I think that just a little bit of happiness can literally change somebody's day, whether it's a smile, a positive word, or in this case, sharing experiences. So, I mean, I'm glad you're putting this out there, because it's ticking a lot of boxes for people that they probably didn't know they needed. So that's great.
Yeah, I mean, the three elements that one of the guys that started the Chosen, Daryl Leaves, who you may know from our Critics' Choice chat, he does all the stuff for Mr. Beast, and he was saying the secret behind YouTube is, you know, there's kind of three things that they look for that kind of checks all their boxes, which is educate, entertain, and inspire. And I was like, wow, that's kind of what I'm trying to do anyway. You know, and so really it's kind of taking these big people and, you know, doing some educational stuff and trying to inspire people. And that's really all I'm trying to do. And I feel like just putting good out there in the world, you know, rather than, you know, I don't want to do the TMZ thing. No offense to them. Like, that's just not my thing. You know, I have no gotcha questions. I don't want to, you know, stir the pot. You know, if there's something bad going on, I don't want to talk about their divorce, their problems, you know, any, you know, any things that are uncomfortable for them. Like, let's talk about the good stuff. Let's talk about like what made you do it. You know, if given the opportunity, I love to talk to them about the first thing, like the bug that bit them. Like what, like was that first movie they saw, the first TV show, and they just thought, oh, I'm gonna do that, you know, and just hearing like, you know, I'm just all the good stuff.
But you know, because at the end of the day, they're people too. You know, as much as we might put them on pedestals or idolize them, there's a point where they're going through similar struggles. I mean, there's that song from Sinatra. You know, show business. You know, your uncle might have died at dawn, but the show must go on. The idea, like, these people are just doing jobs. They're out there to entertain or inspire, whatever it is. And they have the same things that we go through. So having that connection, I found, is so much more beneficial in the long run, not just to them, but the audience who gets the interview, reads it, watches it, whatever. It's just, you see these people as people. And I could say that I know you've had 1,000 of these, as you mentioned, but like, sometimes I'll have, you know, a chat about something, like you said, before the interview starts, and that still sticks in my head, talking to this composer about his cats, when it really had nothing to do with the topic du jour. So it just, you know, it's having that connection. So that's why you're good at your job, Paul.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're, I don't know, I guess depending on how you look at it, but right now we seem to be in some, you know, slightly dark times, you know, and there's a lot of things going on in the world that's kind of sad and confusing and divisive. And this is not that. This is the, you know, something, this has no agenda, you know, any kind of political agenda. It's got no, you know, any sort of anything. It's for, I'm just trying to do it. And the good news is because I've written so much before, I already have book two done. It's turned in. So in case I fall off a cliff, it's still coming out as long as people want it. And I'm hard at work on part three right now. So, all the material is done for it. I'm just, you know, typing monkey, you know, doing as much as I can to try and get it ready. I don't know why I have that thing about me to where I'm always thinking like I'm going to run out of time, you know. Probably because I'm always running behind and trying to do too much, but it's something in my head. I'm like, I got to finish part three. And then I'm sitting there going, part two isn't even out. Calm down. But I just know that no one's going to go through this stuff and organize it if I do fall off a cliff. So here we go.
It'll be a picture of you upside down. They'll take the one from the first book and be like, this is Paul.
Yeah,
the good thing is,
that'd be, I mean, about right. That would be kind of my sense of humor.
with some flowers. Well, I mean, I guess it's all about priorities, you know? I mean, like, going after what you want. You've clearly gone after what you want, but it's just a matter of, you know what needs to be done, and now it's just executing it. And so I guess with all the people you've met and, you know, the resources that you have, you know, you mentioned before, you don't watch your own videos. So who does your editing? Who's helping, you know, write copy for this book? Who's helping, you know, keep the machine called Paul going?
Well, it's generally just me as far as like, so I book all of my own interviews and I come up with all the questions, and most of them are generally, you know, I try not to prepare too much. Like I, you know, if somebody's got a movie, I'm going to watch it. If somebody's got an album, I'll listen to it, but I'm not going to scour the internet for every last little tidbit, you know, and weird nugget of whatever, you know. I really like to, you know, talk about what they're trying to promote and then, you know, get to the meat of it, of like, you know, kind of what makes them tick and kind of these three, you know, main points. And then, you know, you don't have a whole lot of time oftentimes for much besides that. So, you know, it's always nice. It's funny when I see people sitting waiting for their interview and they've got like, you know, this nice little list written out of 20 questions. I'm like, oh no, that's not me. But I think, you know, the thing is like just trying to get to the good stuff as quickly as you can while still developing some kind of rapport, you know, cause it, you know, it ends up through Critics' Choice Awards or through something else. I end up seeing these people anyway, or through friends of mine at parties or whatever. So, you know, oftentimes the conversation will continue. Just, you know, we have to keep it in those like little short parameters sometimes, right?
Sure. Well, I can tell you, I used to be the pad guy just because I wanted to make sure that I would get the points. And, fair enough, sometimes you do end up asking a press packet question and it looks like an idiot. But there's just, it really strips the flow of the interview. If it's just like, they might have talked about their mother and how inspiring they were, but like, yeah, what was it like in that car? It's like there's, it's got to have a natural rhythm to it. And so I think, this teeing up my next question. I think one of my favorite interviewers out there, specifically for the advice he gave, is Marc Maron. And one of them was I think it's his top 5 points were, don't do any prep work, which I don't know. It might be paraphrasing, but I feel like he's got to do some work. But like, two, don't ask the obvious questions. Don't ask Keith Richards about drugs. But there's other things that like really came into it just to keep it organic. But who do you look for? Who impresses you?
As far as the people that do interviews,
Yeah.
I don't, it's I kind of look for like the way that they make it look. If they make it look effortless, I mean, sometimes we'll see like Mari Lopez, for example, Ryan Seacrest, doing their thing, and to be able to do it on that level at that high of a thing, just is admirable, because you don't really see them sweat or fumble through questions, or do they make it look pro, and that's what I always try and do it as well. And they're not sitting there with the prepared notes and questions and all that stuff, and they may have a little bit of help. They may have a staff, which I don't have. Oh, and to answer your question, so I do a lot of that stuff myself, but Christine Thompson from AMFM Magazine is the one that edits all the stuff. That is one skill that I do not have, is video editing, which is a really important skill right now, and I should have learned years ago, but right now I try and stick to just being the talking monkey and let someone else decide what it is that's good enough to get back out there.
Gotcha. So when you said there were times where you would only get a sound clip or something small used, like where did your content, if they didn't use it, that's one thing, but like what were some of the outlets that used it,
Oh yeah.
and where can we find your stuff?
Yeah, totally. So AMFM magazine, which the URL has changed a few times, was AMFM-magazine.tv, is the one, this comprehensive one that has all the old and new stuff on there. And then of course, through Drew Pearson Live, all those episodes on ABC and KTXD are all on YouTube. And then all the entertainment, Inside Entertainment episodes are all on YouTube. All the Let's Go DFW episodes are on YouTube. And I have everything linked on my website, which is paulsoffman.com, and then a lot of it's on the goingforwardbook.com. I've done stuff for OSN in Dubai, and who knows where those clips are. I get those sometimes, and they get the subtitles on there. But sadly, all the stuff I did for Dallas Morning News and Quick and Envy Magazine and 944 and Flavor Pill and all those ones, they're all lost in time now. The websites are down, or they don't archive anything. And thankfully, I was smart enough to save PDFs of all those things, and I save all my audio and video files, and I have kind of the rights to all my work. So it was good to have all that. But yeah, it's sad that a lot of the stuff, if I didn't save the PDFs and put it on my own site, who knows? Like, you wouldn't be able to see them anywhere. Of course, those are the really old ones. But yeah, for now, there's plenty of stuff. You just do a Google search or YouTube search, and you'll just see more than you ever wanted to see of me. More than I want to see of me.
Well, I have to laugh. There was I might still have it on my wall behind me. Oh, I do. Let me get it. It's a
Uh-oh.
fun takeaway. Anyway, do you remember this movie?
I do, yes, and I am on there on the back.
You are. And I always thought that was so cute. I remember when I would come out and meet with Allied or Maroc, and they'd be like, give us your comments. And so, and back in the day, I was like, this is blah, 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 blah. So you got two words. Do you remember what the words were?
No, but I remember going, I don't think that's exactly how I said it. Yeah. I remember It was such a fun movie, and you know, they do ask for quotes, and sometimes I wonder, is this paraphrasing? But you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
What does it say?
The words were comedic dynamite, and I think that's just really kind of cute. It's concise. It tells a story. It's like, yeah, I think I'm going to have fun with this movie. So I think it, in a way, it's a lot like Going for It. It's a very quick indicator of what the book's going to be about and how much fun you're going to have. So,
yeah. And you know, it's funny, like we've been asked for quotes, you know, for a bunch of things. And I was quoted, I think, on an X-Men trailer, you know, of like the one that I really liked. And I think I was quoted on a horror movie box that ended up in like Walmart, like at one of those bins or whatever. And that's about it as far as I know. But I was never one of those ones that wanted to give like just cheesy credits just to have my name out there, because I think that's the thing. Like, if you're putting your name out there or your outlet out there, and it's off of a bad movie, like then that's, you know, that's your name literally on the line, you know. Trying to think of just something that was just terrible, but you know, there, you know, critics that we know of, like that will just give a good quote to anything just to end up on, you know, they like that kind of stuff. I don't like that. Like the last Halloween movie we all know was not the best, you know, and you know, if I were to put my name on there and say this is the best in the franchise yet, you know, I'd be like, I wouldn't feel good about myself, you know. That'd just be, I just feel like John Carpenter's not dead, but he'd be spinning in his bed, you know, like going, really better than the first, you know. But there are people that will do that. I am not that guy.
Yeah. I'm gonna go hold my cigarette. I gotta go talk to this guy.
He'll come through the screen on Zoom and be like, but yeah, it's, you know, and there's. And I think there's been some articles exposing some of those people, you know, with their collection of quotes for, you know, great quotes for bad movies. And that is, you know, thankfully I'm not on that list. You know, I will defend the good guys. I will defend the X-Men movies. I'll defend the Conjuring. You know, that's okay. But like, you know, and, you know, everybody has their own opinion, as we see from all the odd reviews online, not only from critics, but from, you know, from everybody else, from the viewers, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes scores, and, you know, everyone's allowed to have their own opinion, but some of them are a little bit skewered.
Fair. You know, the funny thing I've been thinking about over the years is that, I used to have a writer on the site who kind of urged me to maybe be a little kinder to a movie or something. And we had a back and forth about, well, that's just how I feel about it. So, you know, why would I soft soap my feeling? And not like I was legitimately throwing things under the bus. It was just, well, this didn't work for me. But I think that in a way he's right. You kind of have to be careful, just because, I mean, just because you don't like something doesn't mean somebody else won't. So that there's this idea that, you know, your favorite movie might be someone else's most hated movie. And it's just funny how the universe works, just because everybody has their own taste and what's, you know, a litmus test for what works for them. So I don't know. I also think too, sometimes I think we have to look at things through such a small like lens, you know, see it on Wednesday, review it on Thursday, put it in on Friday, that sometimes you might have to sit through it two times or three times, and it really wears differently on you. Or, you know, I mean, because the people who make it see it 15 times or more. Right. And so it's like, I don't know, just there's something about the immediacy of dumping something if you don't like it. So not really.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather, you know, it's kind of the old thing the mom says, like, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. And so usually what I end up doing is, you know, right now I do one movie review a week on KLAK, and it's called the Movie Minute, and it's a 1 minute review, you know, and I'll pick the movie that I like for the week. So I'm not just absolutely trashing it, unless there happens to be nothing else out and this one's not that good. Then I just have to do a review anyway, just to keep up the, you know, the one a week thing. And but in general, I try not to trash. I say this was not the target audience for this movie was not me. You know, is maybe something I would say, or I would say, you know, this is it. You know, because I try not to bring myself into it. I try to not to say me or I in the reviews too much. You know, this is kind of like, you know, this is made for certain audiences, and, you know, or whatever. But I just really, I don't. you know, I don't like to trash people's art, but like, because, you know, it is good for somebody, but there are people that know that they make bad art, and, you know, they never, it, a lot of them will tell you in interviews, they don't intend as they, nobody sets out to make a bad movie. Minus a couple of people, you know, they, but like somehow it just turns into that. And, you know, like something will change, the director changed, the writer changes, script changes are in there, the actors change, and then all of a sudden it's not what they signed up for. And, you know, you can tell in the interviews when they don't really want to talk about the movie. So they usually know if it's bad, you know, but I also don't want to be the guy that trashes everything and that I end up hanging out with somewhere and be like, oh, you're the guy that said my movie was the worst thing. You know, we wish he could get his 2 hours of his life back. I'm like,
Yeah. Whoops.
So, yeah, because that does happen, you know. And hey, I'm not immune to criticism myself. So, like, you don't want to put some bad out in the world and, you know, criticize everybody. And then you put something out and then everybody's like, oh, that guy? Mm-hmm. Remember me? So.
You know, you also bring up a good point too. I remember I was doing some writing for the Dallas International Film Festival. I don't remember if it was still the AFI association with it, but I think it was Mike Daniel. He was an editor, and he gave me some good advice. And he said that unless your name is Roger Ebert, very few people care about what you think of a film. So that led me to, as you mentioned, not put I or me or I think in the review and just say, you know, it had trouble connecting or it felt disjointed, like more global things. But that actually led me to maybe more your world, because I felt a lot more focused on talking to people who make the stuff, because I figure if there's an opinion out there that needs to be heard, it's the people behind it. So that's why I love doing the press junkets and also talking to composers. That's kind of my niche. So yeah, all good things, all good things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's the best stuff. I'd rather talk to the people behind it than actually review it. You know, to be honest with you, it's really, you know, like I said, it's the same thing. It's just my opinion. You know, of course, I seem to be on par with a lot of people. You know, there's a lot of stuffy critics that like the really like independent, weird, and, you know, kind of off kilter things, you know, but I feel like I have a, you know, good general taste for what people do. I'm not gonna look at like the Bad Boys movie and be like, oh gosh, you know, now we have to watch this. No, I'm excited about it just like everybody else, you know. But if you said, okay, well, you can review Bad Boys before anybody else, or you could talk to Will Smith, I'll talk to Will Smith. You know what I mean? You know, some people aren't like that. So I just enjoy doing this. Like I love it. And you know, I've been getting into more like the talking to the composers and the people, you know, that really, really make things work. And I enjoy those interviews probably the most.
Oh, great. Well, I've got a bunch to share with you. Send yours my way. Let's talk over coffee and have a, you know, fun session.
Absolutely.
Well, let me ask you something that's a little more topical. I remember as we were planning this interview, I ran into you in the lobby of the Alamo. And if I had known that would be the last time we'd be in an Alamo for probably a while, at least in the DFW area, I mean, it kind of hit like a, you know, kick in the teeth. So I wonder how they're going to do, you know, press screenings. I wonder how, you know, I remember seeing you at a couple of the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory Q&As that I hosted. It's great seeing you in the audience. So I was like, that's going to just disappear, those fun parties. So like, what's going to draw people out of their homes now?
I don't know, because we just lost the Angelica in Plano too, which was also very sad. Of course, you know, that one I didn't go to as much, but, you know, we got to hang on to the Angelica Dallas. That's where, you know, a good chunk of our screenings are. And then, you know, it's the theater that plays, you know, all the movies that maybe North Park doesn't. And so now, yeah, it's really sad, because Alamo has always been my favorite theater just to go to. If I were just like, where should we go? You know, because I love the food. I love that they play the old retro movies. I was always at, you know, if they played a terrible old 80s horror movie, you could probably bet that I was there, you know, in the Richardson location, you know, it's near my family. And, you know, You know, I will go see any of those old Halloween or Friday the 13th movies or any, you know, I would look every month to see what they had. And it really is like that one's a tough loss because, you know, that's also where people really respected and loved the movies and were quiet during the movies and, you know, where we got to see our good things. But, you know, we got Texas Theater, you know, and I know Angelica hopefully will pick up the slack with a few more because they do some of the retro movies. But, you know, it'll be nice to see, like, you know, what happens from here. But yeah, it's, you know, it's going to make Fantastic Fest all that much more special this year when we go and, you know, spend that week watching all those good movies that we just don't really see everywhere else. And I'm going to have to get some good Alamo. I'm going to eat every meal there.
Yeah. I think the drought or the pit left by those, these five DFW locations closing is going to really make our appetite and appreciation for the things we love even more special and more a lot more hungry. But yeah, I mean, I love the Fantastic Fest crowd. That's actually the first time I was at an Alamo, and I just couldn't believe the business model, the servers like ninjas, the things they showed, and just the fact that you could, you know, turn around and be like, hey, there's Carl Urban. Hey, there's Elijah Wood. Hey, I loved your movie. Yeah, thanks. So just like they were fans just like we are, and it was a nice little melting pot. So
yeah, I love it. And I hope there'd be something that could be done. I mean, if we could get one Alamo in Dallas, that would be just fine. But, you know, it makes me kind of worried for, you know, the theater going experience. I mean, you know, the sad thing is we all have nice home theater setups now, so we don't really have to go out. You know, it takes a, you know, special kind of strange person to want to go and see a Friday the 13th movie on the, you know, on the big screen when you have it at home. But you know, I like the theater experience. I like going to those and, you know, being among the audience. And a lot of times at these screenings, when they have someone from the film there, that's even better, you know? So I really love it. And that's just so sad, but hopefully we'll, if we get an opportunity at something else, I know that there's the Violet Crown Cinema downtown and I don't see them, you know, I don't know of them doing too much, you know, except for outside the film festival thing, but maybe they'll pick up the slack.
I think we need something. We need a hero. We need a hero to the end of the night.
Yes.
But all right, Paul, we've taken up so much of your time. Love all the tidbits and the stories and the stories about your stories and stuff. So I think you've mentioned where we can find you, but once again, maybe you can rattle down the Instagram, website, Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Where are you?
So all of it is at Paul Salfen, which is S-A-L-F-E-N. And Going For It is the name of the book, and it's at Going For It Book on social media. But we've got, let's see, it is available online in Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million. Like, there's a bunch of places that have the book available, and you know, if you're not one of those physical book people, I think it's $2 on the Kindle right now. So hopefully everyone will pick it up. But more importantly, I hope they share it with people that they could actually, you know, use it or take it to heart, because that's really the whole point of doing this. You know, it's not, you know, although I'm the conduit for it, it doesn't even have my story in there, you know, like all the stuff that I've told you about my life is not in the book. It's not about me. It's about these people, the great things they've done, and just in hopes that those words don't just disappear into the world like they have when magazines fold and newspapers shut down and TV shows and you know, they can live on through here. So hopefully everyone will check it out, and then we'll do part 2 and 3, and if people still care, I'll keep going. Why not?
Line your bookshelves with a whole series of Salfens. That'll be fun.
You know, my both of my grandfathers have written a book, and I'm trying to get my dad to write a book. So yeah, hopefully there will be more than one Salfen. Maybe my daughter will write a book, you know, but you know, hopefully it's not just, hopefully I'm not the lone Salfen, but if so, it means that people actually care, and so that's pretty exciting. One last tidbit about it: I just found out an SMU professor has read it twice, teaches sociology there is making a required reading, and he's giving a lecture on the book in his class, which is just, you know, a good testament to, okay, good, maybe this was worth doing, you know?
Excellent. Well, quite the affirmation. Well, Paul, we hate to let you go, but everyone check out Going For It, check out Paul's reviews, his interviews, and just his general personality. So if you're going anywhere in DFW or maybe the coast or Rome, Georgia, you're probably going to run into Paul. So tell him we said hi, give him a high five, and we will catch you next time.